You know, it's a national initiative to bring back to decrease the amount of smokers in Canada. And a lot of people say the way to smoking cessation is to turn to e-cigarettes. There's an interesting story in the New York Times that I came upon yesterday, which included some interesting x-rays of this kid's jaw that was basically obliterated. Maybe that's a bit extreme, but his jaw was severely damaged by an e-cigarette. His mother had bought him a vaping kit because she and her husband were hoping that he would quit smoking because he had been a smoker. And this is last March. She and her husband were sitting in the living room. They heard this loud pop, and in runs their 17-year-old son holding his bloody jaw. His e-cigarette had exploded in his mouth, and apparently he was bleeding quite badly. It looked like he had a hole in his chin, so they rushed him to the hospital, and then they rushed him to a trauma unit. And Austin told the doctor that he saw this big flash, felt a terrible pain in his lower jaw, and quickly pulled the device out of his mouth. He had a major fracture in his lower jaw, including a 2-centimeter piece that had exploded and was missing. He was also missing multiple teeth, and the surgeons had to put a plate under his gum. His surgeon says she believes the injury was caused by an exploding battery, but could not be certain about it. And the Food and Drug Administration have expressed concerns in the states about e-cigarettes and other vaping devices injuring people from overheating and then the batteries exploding. There was an interesting bit of research done at the University of Waterloo, and the findings are unsettling when it comes to teens turning to vaping. We're joined now by Dr. Jeffrey Fong, who is the professor of psychology at the University of Waterloo, founder of and chief principal investigator of the International Tobacco Control Policy Evaluation Project that we're talking about. So welcome to the show, Doctor. It's good to have you on.
Oh, thanks, Kelly.
So that story, extremely unsettling, especially when you're talking about a teenager. But what findings did you come to with your research into vaping and smoking as far as youth are concerned in Canada?
Yeah, we have done for a number of years international work on examining smoking across different countries. And more recently, we have turned our attention to examining vaping as well as smoking, not only among adults, but among youth. And we have just reported recently on trends between 2017 and 2018 on youth smoking and vaping across three countries, Canada, England, and the United States. And just for a little bit of context, smoking rates have gone down among adults and especially among kids over the last few decades. Although there are challenges because, with respect to the tobacco industry continuing to market a truly deadly product with respect to cigarettes, this has opened the door, and with the public realization of it, it's opened the door to alternative nicotine products like e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes might have some promise that has been shown in getting adult smokers to quit. But there's also a concern about the potential that e-cigarettes might be related to increased smoking and just the fact that there is, among some in the public health community, youth that are using nicotine products. So there is concern. So we want to look at this across different countries to see what the trends are.
Right. And what did you find with regard to Canadian teens turning to vaping products?
What we found is between the summer of 2017 and the 2018, there has been a significant increase among youth in vaping. And we see this not so much with established smokers, but what is concerning is that the increase proportionately has been among never smokers and those that are experimental smokers.
So unlike that story about Austin, who had, his parents had got him an e-cigarette to get off of smoking, these are teens that have never tried to smoke that are turning to vaping. Can you get into the whys? What's attracting them to vaping? Did your study go into that?
Yeah, so let me just say, first of all, before I go into that, current smokers among youth and among adults are way, way, way more likely to be vaping as well. So our increase in never smokers is really quite a small proportion of these never smokers compared to current, you know, current smokers. So really, when we're talking about increases, it's still quite low with respect to the percentage.
Okay.
Now, with respect to why, the reason why we wanted to look at Canada versus England and U.S. is because the nature of vaping products has been quite different across the three countries. England has had vaping for longer. They have a very well-established regulatory system for vaping compared to smoking. The U.S. is changing quite a bit. And Canada, in the spring of 2018, legalized vaping. So that's why it was interesting to examine Canada from 2017 to 2018, because that captures making, you know, vaping legal, and the other two countries, you know, it was quite different. So that's where we find the increase. I mean, whenever you legalize something, you're going to find naturally an increase in that activity.
Yeah, people try it. They figure, okay, well, the government says it's safe, basically. I think a lot of people look at things like that.
Exactly. So that's number one. Number two is that in a peculiar twist in Canada, for the first, you know, 180 days at least, when vaping was legalized, there was advertising for vaping products, whereas, of course, we have great strong restrictions on cigarettes in Canada, deservedly so. But why was it that vaping products were, you know, able to basically advertise at will?
Sure.
It's because in Canada, when you have restrictions on our advertising and marketing, you need to give the companies advance notice that you're going to be taking away their commercial right to free speech, right?
Ugh, and we were just wading into this, so we didn't have time to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, another thing, too, is that before vaping was legalized, there were no legal companies.
Right.
So that's why, in a peculiar and understandable, situation legally in Canada, there was free advertising that was going on because there were no companies to inform.
And we know advertising is basically a persuasion. So if you can persuade the right market to get in on your product, then you're golden.
Yeah. And Health Canada recognizes this and is, you know, formulating, you know, much stronger plans to limit that. That's the second thing. So legalization, free marketing, basically. The third one is that there has been the emergence of these new products that you may have heard of, like Juul, which have a different kind of, it's called salt-based nicotine solution. And it turns out that has been associated with a more powerful kick for the nicotine that's present in the e-cigarette. And the fourth one is that Juul and other kind of salt-based pod e-cigarettes have a coolness factor. Mm-hmm. That is, it's Juul itself looks like kind of like a USB stick. It's easy to use it without being detected. It doesn't have all this vapor and, you know, these clouds of vapor. And so there's kind of been a coolness and a tech factor to these new products. So to disentangle all of that, to say which one is doing what, is extremely difficult to do because they happen all at the same time.
But what you can do is talk about the nicotine kick, which, you know, you said the Juul delivers a higher nicotine kick. I think a lot of people are walking around, especially young people, under the impression that this is actually, if you vape, it's not going to do as much harm.
And I think that any government and governments all over the world have taken different approaches, need to figure out, what can we do to regulate e-cigarettes so that they are encouraged by smokers to get off of smoking, by far the most deadliest, you know, consumer product ever? It kills basically half of its regular users. And vaping is much less harmful. There is debate about this in the advocacy community, but among the scientific reviews, it's much less harmful than cigarettes.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting because you say it's much less harmful than cigarettes, but I think that that is not, it doesn't equate to no harm. And I think there's a lot of teenagers walking around thinking, this is harmless.
Right, and any advocate of vaping who says no harm,
yeah.
I don't believe there are any, but I think it's more like those people who are anti-vaping who claim that vaping advocates say that. I mean,
right.
From the scientific perspective, it's very clear that there is harm,
yep.
Just much less harm than cigarettes. That kills half of its regular users. So what can we do for, you know, governments? What can governments do to bring out the attractiveness of that for the adults while yet protecting the kids from use, especially those that are not smoking? And that's a balance that's very tricky, and different governments have taken different approaches. And I think Canada is in the middle, but there needs to be more done with respect to the marketing and you know, and advertising of these products. And that remains, you know, something that Health Canada is considering right now.
San Francisco is set to become the first major U.S. city to ban e-cigarettes. You've done research on, you know, why people are picking up e-cigarettes. Do you think there's any appetite for Canada or a major city in Canada? You know, I would think Vancouver maybe would be the most logical one to be the to follow that ban.
Yeah, well, at the federal level, you know, vaping is now legal. I do not recall from the legislation or in Canadian law whether cities can actually make specific decisions on that. I just don't know the mm-hmm. jurisdictional issues. I do know that, you know, different provinces, you know, have the ability to have different kinds of restrictions on vaping products. But I think that what's called for is a balance here, because these products have been shown to help, you know, smokers quit. And so where is that balance? And I think that's what governments are struggling with. And that's why we're doing our research in many different countries where the regulations are different, to see what, you know, where the balance might be best.
A lot of people bring up the idea of flavored nicotine being there solely to attract, you know, young kids with bubblegum flavor and the like. When you did research into teens using e-cigarettes, did you ask any questions about flavored nicotine? And if so, which nicotine flavor were they most attracted to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in our work as well as in work of others, you know, flavors are attractive for everyone. And it's adults versus, you know, and youth. There is, you know, some more attraction to candy and fruit flavors among youth relative to adults, adult smokers. But it's not overwhelming. It's not like, oh, 90% youth versus 5% adults. It's really much closer than that. And so the difficult thing for regulation is that, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, to be sure there are some, and we always talk about unicorn puke and, you know, other sorts of things like that, that sure, you know, you can eliminate those obvious ones. But general categories like candy and fruit mm-hmm. are going to be difficult to draw the line, because they're attractive to adults as well as youth.
Okay, I can't be the only one wondering, and I have to ask, whenever I hear somebody say something that I have never heard of before, I go backwards and ask questions about it. Unicorn puke,
sure.
Can you clarify?
Yeah, I don't know that much, except, you know, when people talk about flavors, they talk about the some of the obvious ones that, you know, that should be banned, and I think they're probably picking, you know, the most sensational ones out of thousands of flavors. And that's just one that came to my mind at that moment that's been talked about.
Okay.
I don't think this is in the top 100.
Unicorn puke is, though, a flavor.
Well, it used to be a flavor.
Wait a minute. I just Googled it. I've done some research with my fingers here. It's a perfect blend of warm summer days and a scoop of rainbow sherbet. Well, that doesn't tell me much more, but it is, you know.
It's certainly attractive, but, you know, is it totally attractive to youth versus adults? I don't know.
I don't know. Who doesn't love the perfect blend of warm summer days and a scoop of rainbow sherbet?
Well, especially for us now, having experienced a very wet spring.
Yeah, and it's first day of summer. At least it's arriving in about an hour or so. Before I let you go, I would love to ask you, Dr. Fong, what is your next course of research with regard to e-cigarettes?
Right. Well, we're continuing to collect data on youth as well as adults, not only in Canada but in other countries. And I think what's really important is for us in our research to really examine not only the specific issues with respect to youth but also with respect to adults. And this is the sort of the puzzle that needs to be resolved with respect to, you know, what vaping represents both for youth and also for adults. We know from the literature that, you know, adults can be helped by e-cigarettes. And it's the leading cause, preventable cause of death in Canada as well as throughout the world. But there are potential threats to youth. And we need to continue to track that and to figure out what kinds of, you know, legislation, regulations can achieve the kind of balance that we need to protect youth at the same time as, you know, promote potentially encouraging adults that smokers that aren't being helped by current established methods to perhaps use vaping products in attempts to quit.
Well, I can't be the only one thinking this has been a very interesting conversation, and you've got mail.
Yeah.
Dr. Fong, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
Have a great day.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.